I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to Season 2 of the 147 Podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning Players and Tour Champion and former Champion of the World, the magician, Sean Murphy.
And it's the Christmas special. I'm sat here in York with my mug of hot mulled wine, topped up with amaretto, the true taste of Christmas. Sean, how's Dublin?
No such amaretto here, I'm afraid, but Merry Christmas. What a fabulous time of year it is. Are you a Christmas lover, Phil? I don't know this about you.
I adore Christmas. Christmas is fantastic. So just to explain to anyone, Sean has come on the video call today and casually in the background, he has the Players' Championship Trophy, the Tour Championship Trophy, and his Championship League paperweight. just in the background.
Do you know what happened?
Casually on the window.
Do you know what happened? I through the magic of our social platforms, I realised that you like to take the odd sneaky picture of us during our podcasts and stick them up. Now, the last picture that you took was possibly the most unflattering picture that I've ever had that's ever been taken.
There have been
a few bad ones, to be fair. So I just thought I'd just, you know, preempt that. I can see your camera. I can see it. I just thought I'd preempt that by and reminding myself with these trophies in the background that I actually used to be pretty good at snooker, although present form wouldn't suggest that.
Yeah, form is temporary. Form is temporary. Class is permanent, magician. You know that.
Oh, I hope you're right.
Now, before we get into the snooker, firstly, thank you. Massive thank you to everyone that listens to the podcast, that gets in touch with us, that shares the podcast around as well. This is officially the number one rated snooker podcast for 2023 with Apple, Spotify and Google. So just a huge thank you. That means the world to us, Sean, doesn't it really?
Yeah, it does. And go back to when we started the podcast, you know, it was an idea that we shared through lockdown when we used to go on those long walks with our friend John McDonald. And then the idea kind of percolated through and we just thought it'd be something really good and a bit of fun. But without the listeners, without you guys listening every time and taking it and downloading it and liking it and subscribe and all of that, without you getting interactive and involving yourself in our podcast, it doesn't work. It's just that me and you talking rubbish, which, you know, we can do anytime. So a massive thank you to everyone who's taken the time to listen to the show, to download it. Can't believe it, really. Who would have thought it?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And loads of people at the weekend up in Scotland, up in Edinburgh, coming up and saying they listen to the pod and they enjoy it and talking about different things. And yeah, again, that's massively appreciated. And we can reveal, when we're recording this is still embargoed, but by the time this goes out there, this will be released.
Is this the big announcement, Phil?
Yeah, we have been shortlisted for the 2024 Sports Podcast Awards, the Sports Talk Award, we're on the shortlist for it, which goes to a public vote. We're up against a couple of little names, Simon Jordan, Ian Wright, people like that. But just to be shortlisted for that is, that's wonderful. I mean, we're just two blokes that don't really know what we're doing. And somehow we've been shortlisted for the Sports Podcast Awards, which is brilliant, Sean, isn't it?
I think when you put that into context as well, like we literally, we create, we produce, we release, we record, we do this entire thing ourselves. And of course, I'm using the royal we. You do it all. I have absolutely no involvement in any of that side of it. It's all been you. All of that editorial side is you. And we're going up against people who are in, you know, they're recording it in studios. They've got massive budgets being pumped into them. You know, all of that stuff. They've got the weight of these incredible businesses behind them, promoting them. And little old the 147 podcast has found itself nominated amongst them. So listen, stranger things have happened. And we'll both be getting on our platforms in the coming days and weeks to engage and encourage all you listeners to vote for us. It is a public vote. So listen, we're going to be coming to you, asking you for your support. Nobody, you know, don't fall into the trap of believing all the hype. Don't believe these things that it's all about taking part. It's all about winning.
Hey, listen.
And we will be trying to get the win. That means you will have to vote.
This is true, you will. I'm happy to be on the shortlist, to be honest. To be on that shortlist alongside some of those names is tremendous. And just when you say that, you know, just for anyone listening that thinks, I know a lot of podcasts are all cut together and edited. We've never once edited this podcast. We literally record and release. There's never any editing. I think we aborted one once due to technical issues. I think one of our Wi-Fi kept dropping out or it wasn't working properly. But we've never actually edited a podcast. So we literally record it and upload it instantly to Acast, and out it goes to all the providers. So it's not actually edited at all. It's just what we say goes out there, which is quite dangerous, really.
Of course, if you listen carefully, you can probably hear a lot of listeners say, yeah, we wish you would edit it. We wish you would cut
out. Yeah, probably get down to about 12 minutes each week. There you go. So anyway, yeah, so just a big thank you from us to all of you that listen. And that's one of the reasons why we thought we'd do a Christmas special, really, because we are about a week and a half early in this podcast, but we thought we'd do a little Christmas special. We have got loads of listener questions that we're going to get through because a load of you have written in. We're going to get through a load of those on this podcast today. There's quite a few Christmassy ones, which is nice as well, Sean, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. But just one more thing on this sports award thing. Guys, when we come to you and ask you to vote, right, you're going to have to get involved. If for nothing else than just to hear my absolutely professional and very modest winner's speech when we stick it right up, righty, and that's Simon Jordan. Big potatoes.
Big potatoes indeed. So, yes, look out on the socials. We will be obviously publicising that everywhere very, very shortly and asking you to vote. So, if you would, that would be fantastic. Right, let's catch up on the snooker then. So, Scottish Open. I was there at the weekend in Edinburgh. Sadly, Sean,
no need for that.
Sadly, didn't last that long. However, no. It was a great tournament and so weird. Gary Wilson, the Tyneside Terror, took the win. He won that tournament 12 months ago. Since then, no, not insulting Gary here at all. He's admitted this. He's done very, very little. I don't think he's been past the second round of a tournament all season this season. Goes up to Edinburgh and wins it again. I mean, that's crazy, Sean, isn't it?
Crazy. Very few people have ever defended their maiden ranking title. He joins an incredibly small club of people to do that. I've been really trying to work out in the last few days what's gone on there, because he seems to cross the border into Scotland and particularly into Edinburgh. He just becomes a different player. Like, I mean, will the real Gary Wilson please stand up?
He is half Scottish. Could be something in that.
Scottish, is he?
Yeah, his mum's Scottish, yeah.
Oh, that's why he never buys a drink, is it?
yeah, something like that.
No, but I mean, this is going to sound ridiculous. No, I know they're not next to each other, but is it the nearest tournament to where he lives?
It can't be far away. I think York is probably slightly closer.
Is it that, you know, maybe people can get up to support him and he likes having more people around him? I don't even know if he does have people travel and family and friends and stuff, but Sorry, whether they try, I'm sure he has family and friends, but I'm not sure if they travel to watch him. Certainly not week in, week out around the UK and around Europe, obviously. But if Edinburgh is not that far up the road from where he lives in the northeast, maybe that's something. Yeah. I mean, other than that, is there something in the water in Edinburgh? I don't know. Maybe those Scottish genes start firing as he crosses the border and he remembers the film with Mel Gibson with the painted streaks across his face. And
Gary Braveheart Wilson, yeah?
Gary Braveheart Wilson rides again. Like, you know, I don't know. I've got no idea. Just thank God all tournaments aren't in Scotland. Yeah. Otherwise, Gary Wilson would be world number one.
It was so weird last week, though. He was so hard on himself earlier in the week. And I saw him, I started from the quarterfinals onwards, and the day before, in the last 16, he'd been really, really sort of done his own performance down. Came out quarterfinals, won 5-0 in his quarterfinal. Absolutely brilliant. Semi-final, he came from behind, he was needed three snookers, he went to a re-spotted black in the decider, and he won it and came through. And then on Sunday, well, he was superb on Sunday. He flew out the gates against Nopon, who, by the way, you will not find a more lovely human being than Nopon Senkam. You know, he's polite. He's just lovely. His little daughter is beautiful as well. Every time I went in the players' lounge, she was blowing kisses to me. She's about 2 years old. Sweet as you like. And really chuffed for him getting to a final. He thoroughly deserved that. And I thought Nopon did himself proud, actually, the way that he came back to Gary in that final, because Gary did come out swinging. I mean, he came out absolutely flying. So yeah, I thought Nopon did well to come back.
I think everyone knows now, because it gets said so much, that Nopon is possibly the nicest person on the World Snooker Tour. A real lovely, lovely person. But what I will say from a snooker point of view is he's also possibly the hardest worker.
Yeah.
Like, he will have got straight back in the car and gone back to Ding's Academy in Sheffield, and he'll be in there now practicing. Whenever you're listening to this podcast, you know, unless it's 3 a.m, and a big hello to all you truckers out there. Unless it's 3 a.m, he's probably in that academy doing long reds and drills and his technique and working on his game. He absolutely loves it. The other thing we haven't talked about, of course, and you mentioned it there briefly in the chat there about the tournament and Gary Wilson coming from behind needing snookers in the deciding frame. I've taken some absolute pelters in the last few days for my suggestion during the UK is that we scrap snookers required and move on. Oh, we wouldn't have had that drama. We wouldn't have had that moment. Gary wouldn't be in the final. This, that, and the other. I've taken some absolute stingers.
And those pelters will continue because there is a question based on that from a listener later on, Sean. So brace yourself. It's coming again.
I'm excited about it.
Just another quick note from the weekend. Sanderson Lam, he's having the best season of his life, is Sanderson Lam. Did really well in the shootout. He did really well again up in Scotland, I think quarterfinals. Sanderson Lam seems to have found something this season, something slightly different. And again, really, really great guy, Sanderson, the panda. Lovely fella, plays over in Leeds at Northern, as many players do. And it's great to see him doing well. It's great to see some new names, as it were, doing well in tournaments, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's consistent. You know, as you've just said, Sanderson's having the best season of his life, I think. And it's not just a little, you know, that's a great week in the sun and you don't see him for 6 months. He's consistently churning out some really good performances, as are many others. Tom Ford springs to mind again, was in the latter stages of Scotland. Obviously, Zhangander, you know, Mighty Mouse, seems to have come from nowhere. Of course, I'm playing him in the Masters in January, so there won't be much time taken off for me over Christmas. I've got my hands full there with Zhang. So there's quite a few players who seem this year, in the absence of some of the other major top players picking up silverware, who are sort of starting to go, hang on a minute, I fancy the job here. And fair play to them.
So you've got Zhangander in the Masters, the one of the form players of the season. And then the World Grand Prix draws just come out and you've got the easy task in that one. You've only got John Higgins, haven't you? That's it.
Of course, they say it comes in threes, don't they?
Goodness me. That's talk about a tough draw. John, of course, reaching the semi-finals at the weekend.
I'll probably get Joe Davis in the German Masters.
You'd take Joe Davis in the German Masters, wouldn't you? Yeah, so, tough draws all the way. Now, so congratulations to Gary Wilson. Very well deserved. Nice guy. Great to see him winning again. I hope he can carry that form on now. He seems to have found something up there. Hopefully that travels with him. So that does qualify for the World Grand Prix as well. He wasn't in there before that. So he will be there in Leicester in January. Now, big snooker news last week. Sean, congratulations. You got voted onto the board. Now, just for people that don't fully understand, just explain what the structure is, first of all, and what this means.
Yeah, so the game used to be under the umbrella of WPBSA, the World Professional Billiards and Snooker Association. And when Barry Hearn took over the sport, that was splintered off into two. So you have the WPBSA, and World Snooker Tour was created. And World Snooker Tour, under the leadership of Barry Hearn, of course, he's recently retired, and Brandon Parker, who is very sadly missed, developed the commercial strategies for the game and have made the game what it is today. You know, obviously on the back of the halcyon days of the 80s and 90s, but Barry and Brandon really have, you know, taken the game from £3.5 million prize money across the season up towards 15, 16 million now. They look after the commercial side of the game. The WPBSA looks after everything else, the rules and regs and the players' issues and all of that stuff. And that itself now has been split off into two. So you've got WPBSA, which now looks after, you know, World Women's Snooker, WDBS, WSF, the amateur side, and WPBSA Players, which has the sole purpose of looking after members and players' issues and being the conduit between the players, and WST. And that's the board that myself, Mark Davis, and Matt Selt have just joined, along with Nigel Bond and Chairman Ken Doherty. And obviously, we're only a week in, but there's been some really robust debate already. And we're looking forward to, you know, taking players' issues and obviously with our own little campaigns as well. We've all got individual things we'd like to see happen in the game. And we're going to run with it and see where we go.
Which is brilliant. Now, just to explain, I think the turnout for the vote was pretty much the highest it's ever been. I think it's probably the first time there's been more people put themselves forward to join the board than there's been spaces. So before, pretty much if you put your hand up, you were on. This time there was actual competition. Does this show that the players are wanting to get more involved? They're showing more of an interest in what's happening in the sport?
100%. You know, so for clarity, I mean, and there was a picture released by WPBSA, which showed about six of us there. So if you take notice of that picture, it doesn't look great. Of course, you know, it's held during an event. So there were a lot of players practicing or playing or not in attendance. They weren't arriving until the next day or whatever. But of 96 eligible votes, 78 were cast, which, you know, I think that's around 80% turnout. I think anyone in any voting system would tell you is a ridiculous turnout. Yeah. I mean, imagine that in a general election, if 80% of people voted, it would be crazy. So, you know, I've been part of votes before where they've struggled to get a quorum, you know, where they've struggled to get enough people in the room to make the meeting happen. I was voted onto the board of WPBSA before WPBSA Players even existed in 2017. I don't think 20 votes were cast in the whole thing.
Yeah.
So for so many players to get off the sidelines and get involved exactly speaks to your point. I think what's happened in recent months with the Macau Five, those rival tour situations, there's quite a lot going on behind the scenes, which, you know, some of which I can talk about, some of which I can't, with promoters pretending to be players' representatives out in China. There's a lot of lies being told. There's a lot of, you know, underhanded tactics being used by a lot of people. I think the players have woken up to their own commercial power and they've realised that they can have a say in this game. And, you know, Barry Hearn has retired. He's stepped away. He's in a, you know, a named position only now. Steve Dawson is running the sport along with Simon Brownhill and WST. They're a little bit more open to debate, I think. And I think the players have gone, you know what? I actually think we can have a good, robust debate, a professional debate around these topics. I'm going to get involved, cast my vote and see what happens. It's great, great news. Apathy, as I said before the vote, apathy is a killer. And it was great to see that apathy not present.
Absolutely. So Ken Doherty and Nigel Bond remain. Yourself, the reigning Indian Open champion, contractual obligation, Matt Selt as well, and Dark Mavis, also known as Mark Davis, are also on the board. So yeah, interesting time for the sport. It'll be interesting to see what happens. There is a question, I think, from a listener coming up later on. Now, just for
I just would like to, just very quickly, though, before we move on, just very quickly like to say publicly that it's always right to just acknowledge the people who've gone before. And, the guys that we've got on, stepping aside, was Mike Dunn and Peter Lynes. And it's only right that their contribution to the sport is recognised. It wasn't until the night before the vote where I was reading through all the candidates' biographies. We all had to write and submit, you know, why we thought we should get on, and that went out to the members. And I was reading Mike's and Peter's, and you forget that during their tenure on the board, they helped guide the ship of world snooker as a whole through a pandemic, through getting the game back towards public ticketing systems, to getting the public back into venues. Obviously, the horrible situation with the Chinese players that have recently been banned for cheating. Yep. They've gone through that and a lot more and shepherded the game to where we are today. And it's only right that their contribution in it is acknowledged and thanked. And, you know, hopefully, you know, there'll be space for them to get involved sometime later on in their future.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's be honest as well, Peter Lynes over in Leeds and Mike Dunn up in the Northeast, they help shape snooker anyway, don't they, full stop. They've both got snooker running through their veins. You know, I think if you cut them, they bleed chalk. So, two proper fellas. Also, people writing in with questions, just moving forward, there are going to be some things Sean can't talk about from the players' board, just because there aren't, because of confidentiality. So if we do duck the odd question, which we're not really known for on this podcast, if we do, that will probably be why. I'm sure Sean will be as open as he possibly can be. So well done, Sean. Anyway, congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Moving on, it should be great for the sport. Now, there are the German Masters qualifiers going on at the moment. You can watch those on Discovery Plus. We're not going to get into those. There's far too many of them to talk about, to be honest. There's loads, but they are on Discovery Plus at the moment. And, Sean, we're doing our first ever exhibition together. How have we got this far without doing an exhibition together? That's weird, isn't it?
Some very clever diary work on my behalf, Phil.
Yeah, I've managed to avoid you pretty well, to be fair. So our mate Tony Morgan of ABC Snooker Exhibitions, he's putting an exhibition on Friday the 26th of January in Mansfield. Tony always puts on a good show. I've done quite a few for him. And yes, it will be me as MC and Sean as the player.
You've worked with other players in other exhibitions. What?
Yeah, it's always nice to work with some good ones. You know what I mean? It's...
Next you'll be telling me, you know, you have a different podcast with somebody else, or,
well,
I don't know, you went to one of my biggest rivals' premieres, or I don't know.
Well, that was great, that highlight of the year. Anyway, moving on. So yeah, 26th of January, look up ABC Snooker Exhibitions on social media, get your tickets for that, and we'll hopefully see you there. Sean, have you got a festive rant for me this week?
Got a festive rant, and everyone who's set foot out of their house in the last couple of weeks is going to know what I'm talking about.
Okay, well, brace yourselves, people, because that is coming up in a few short moments' time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. It certainly is. And please keep doing that. I've had loads of interaction this year from people. It's been brilliant, to be honest. The socials have been so busy. We've got tons of questions coming up today. It is a Christmas special, so we thought we'd make it listen to question heavy. Are you really just moving your camera around so I can see those trophies better in the background, Sean? Honest to God.
Might have been doing. Can I just cut in at this point? Mm. Have we mentioned that we've been nominated and shortlisted in the Sports Podcast Awards, Sports Talk Award? Have we mentioned that?
I don't know if we mentioned it enough, but I'll tell you what, I bet it gets mentioned on every single podcast until the votes close.
Oh, and you know what? I won't be mentioning it at all on my social media platforms. Won't get mentioned. I mean the other thing. I'll be mentioning it all the time.
Everywhere. We need to add to your window ledge there, or your windowsill that's got all your trophies on behind you with another one. So, yeah,
there's plenty of room after this season's performance.
Yeah, have you got the boxes ready to send all those back? Yeah. No, we're joking. He will be defending them to the best of his abilities, I'm sure. Right, time for your festive rant, Mr. Murphy. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, your rant. You have 1 minute 47 seconds from the moment I say rant to the sound of the klaxon, which will, as always, be way too loud, because that's how I like it. Okay, the magician. 3, 2, 1, rant.
Right. This is a Christmas / festive rant. Anyone who's been shopping in the last few weeks will know exactly what I mean. This does actually go for any shopping at any time of the year, but it just seems worse. You know, particularly with men as well, as they come out last minute to do all their Christmas shopping. Shoppers, what is wrong with you? Why can't people walk normally in a straight line? Here's a suggestion, right? Because I'm trying to stay chilled. I'm trying to not let my blood boil with it. Why don't we implement a rule in shopping centres where we walk like we drive on the left and stay out of each other's way? If we drove like we walk around shopping centres, coming out of doors, crisscrossing, barging into people, it would be a wreck. That's how they drive in India. It's not how they drive over here. Why don't we bring a bit of decorum to shopping centres? And it's no wonder shopping centres are dying, is it? It's no wonder they're all closing down, because it's just carnage. When you go in these places, you know, Margaret and Dave just stroll out of Dorothy Perkins right into you. They don't even look. What about giving way to the right like you do on a road? People just stroll out across your path. Oh, sorry. Well, just look before you walk. Don't barge into me with your massive big HMV bag. By the way, no one goes in HMV. How are HMVs still on the high street, just as a small detour? How are they still going? Who's still going in there buying CDs and DVDs? All I use them for is to stack things on. It's ridiculous. How are those shops even still open? But no, why don't we implement a rule like civilized people where we go to these shopping centres and we move around them like we drive? It's ridiculous.
Right. You're right. Okay, you are right. But
I am right.
The one that gets me, it's not that. It's people who are walking right in front of you and then they suddenly stop. Just for no apparent reason, they stop either to look at something, to check their phone or whatever. And I'm quite a big bloke, right? So I'm walking along. Someone stops in front of me, I'm just going to bash into them. I can't stop that quick. So it's just like, why just stop? Step off to the side, do something.
I go up to people now. I've started going up to people who are stood right in the way. You know, they picked the worst place to stop. I've started going up to them now and I say, excuse me, sorry to bother you. Just doing some research on awkward places to stop. And I was just wondering if you could just explain to me how you went about choosing this particular location.
You wonder why you're so liked.
They don't like it. Move out of the way, you clown.
Do you know, when lockdown first eased, every shopping centre, they had the arrows, didn't they, on the left? To put you on the left. And then, since that's all gone, it's like a free-for-all now. You've got to go in there, get your elbows up. Get those elbows up and just go. Head down, elbows up, make your way through, and take no prisoners, basically.
Quite a few good things came out of the pandemic. You know, if we take away all of the really bad stuff, there was actually quite a few good few things, you know, like the arrows in shopping centres, like people being encouraged to wash their hands. I was on the ferry yesterday coming back to Dublin and there was a guy walked into the loo next to me, didn't wash his hands. I just said to him, no, you don't fancy washing your hands today. No, don't fancy it. And he gives me a look as if I'm a maniac.
Do you know, just on the one-way thing and walking one way, the school I went to here in York, greatest city on earth, I knew I was leaving. So I knew I was leaving for sixth form. I was going to a different school to do my sixth form. And I was on the school council. and they'd asked, the teachers asked the school council for some ideas to alleviate congestion in certain corridors, right? So knowing I was leaving, I suggested two things. One was a one-way system around the entire school, okay? So the whole school was one way, which meant that if you had one class in one classroom, the next class in the classroom next door, but it was the wrong way, you had to walk the entire way around the whole school just to get to your next classroom, right? They adopted that, and it's still in play today. And my youngest son goes to that school now, and they all hate it. The other thing I suggested was traffic lights on some doors. I never went for that one. That was a bit too far-fetched. But I finished school. I went to a different sixth form, and I then went out with all the guys I was at school with, and I said, how's school? And they said, oh, it's all right, but they've brought in this ridiculous one-way system. And I'm like, yeah, that's my little present to you.
Merry Christmas.
No, I think you're right. What do you think out there? Everyone's shopping at the moment. It is Christmas time. Does that get your goat?
Somebody somewhere is listening to this podcast walking around a shopping centre, and they've just been barged into, or they've just had to stop at full pace as some, you know, unobservant old timer walks out of a shop and doesn't look to their right and nearly crashes into them. Just like, you actually do wonder what's wrong with people. Like, you know, and they just cut across you. You know, Claire's Accessories isn't that important. Just wait.
Claire's Accessories, having a 4-year-old daughter, Claire's Accessories, by the way, is my own personal hell. That place
just
is...
Just have a little look. You wouldn't drive like that, would you? You wouldn't just cut across lanes and just walk. Oh, no, I had to go to, you know, the drive-thru. I just cut over the road. Just have a little look. Don't get it.
No, it is bizarre. So if that gets your goat, or what else gets your goat about going out there Christmas shopping, let us know at 147pod across all forms of social media. And on to the people that have done just that, let's get stuck into our listener questions. There's a lot of them. I will start with a festive one. Matthew Morley on Facebook says, what's your go-to Christmas tradition? Sean?
Oh, goodness me. Well, you can hear by my hesitancy that I don't really have any.
I do. Every
year, right, okay, what is it?
Christmas Eve, every single year. Love Actually on the telly, because it's probably the ultimate Christmas film after Die Hard. Love Actually on the TV, copious amounts of cheese, biscuits and wine.
Hang on.
Amazing.
Hang on a minute. Love Actually is the best Christmas film of all time behind Die. So you've got Love Actually at number two.
No, Love Actually first, Die Hard number two.
Oh, Love Actually number one?
Yeah, Christmas movie, yeah.
Are you completely mental?
Oh, go on then. What beats Love Actually? Is a Christmas movie.
Oh, no, I'm not. I mean, I love Love Actually. I really like it. It's not the best Christmas film of all time, Phil.
Go on. So what's better than it then? I mean, effectively, it is a film about people cheating on their partners. But if you take that away,
let's take the entire plot out of it.
take that out. Yeah, sorry. Spoiler alert. If you've not seen it, it's all about people cheating on their partners, effectively. But go on then. What's better than Love Actually as a Christmas film?
Well, I'm definitely going to give you Die Hard. I mean, Die Hard is definitely a Christmas. Let's just solve that argument for a minute.
Die Hard is
a Christmas film, and is definitely. I mean, I would definitely have that above Love Actually. And I, you know, again, I like Love Actually. Goodness me! I mean, you could have The Holiday. I think that's potentially better than Love Actually. I'm struggling. Give me some help. I don't know. Home Alone. Home Alone.
Yeah, Home Alone's good. Home Alone, I would say, is in there at number three.
Home Alone 1 or 2, the rest don't count. Yeah, civilized people can agree on that.
Yeah, but I'll give you that one.
Gremlins, is Gremlins a Christmas film?
No, Gremlins is not a Christmas film. Grow up.
How is it not a Christmas film?
So that's my Christmas tradition anyway. Love Actually, Christmas Eve, with loads of cheese, loads of wine.
Don't be strolling onto other questions.
Well, you've not come up with a cogent argument. You've basically thrown Die Hard at me, which I said is number two anyway. And The Holiday, oh, please, come on.
When you think you know somebody. Right, moving on. Nathan Woodward on Facebook. If you weren't a snooker player / sports broadcaster, what would you both be and why? Phil, hit me up.
I'm not sure I'm either of those things. my background is the automotive industry, and I still work in that alongside everything I do in sport and broadcasting. So, yeah, I'd probably just still be working in that, I should imagine. In fact, well, no, I would be. That's what I was doing before I quit the day job to do crazy things like this. So, yeah, I'd be working in the automotive industry in some kind of management or regional role, I guess. Quite boring, that, isn't it, really? What about you, Sean?
I think, well, obviously, you know, if the snooker hadn't worked out, I probably would have ended up as a model. I think we can, you know, all agree on that. That's fine. But, you know, it's sort of embarrassing to say that, but you know, it's probably true. you know,
in a... Sorry, what would you model exactly? Like a hand model or something?
Gloves, ski masks. Yeah. do you know, without being too cheesy and sitting on the fence, snooker was all I ever knew. It's all I ever wanted to do from 8 years of age. It's the only thing I've ever known. My father was in the motor trade as well. Maybe I might have followed him into that. He was also a golfer. You know, I do like a game of golf. Maybe I'd have tried my hand at that. Or maybe, you know, I'd have stayed at school past 13 and gone off and got a degree or did something else with my life. I always, you know, I re-watch Suits on Netflix every year. Absolutely love it. And it always stirs a bit of a passion for the legal side of things in me. I always think, oh, I could see my... Because I do like a good argument. You know, I fancy the row in a court. So who knows? If snooker hadn't worked out, maybe I could have been a model slash lawyer.
Fun for there, just for the breaking news that Sean enjoys playing golf. In case anyone's never listened to the podcast.
In other breaking news, it gets dark at night.
It certainly does. Right, now, a question that kind of follows on from that one, actually. Niall Greenfield on Facebook. Would Sean consider going into coaching after you retire? And has Phil ever received coaching from a pro, ex-pro or qualified coach? If not, would you? So would you consider going into coaching when you retire?
What's your highest break, Phil?
Oh, I can't remember. 30-odd, 40-odd. I've never had a half century.
This is how much we are the snooker podcast that isn't a snooker podcast, because I really should know that about you.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, I've never had a 50, put it that way.
Why don't we do a project? Why don't we do a project to test my coaching skills and to test your ability to take on information, which we all know is pretty poor.
Yeah.
Why don't we see how long it takes us to get you to a 50 break standard?
That, do you know, that would actually be quite interesting. But yeah, that would be quite interesting. To answer the part of that question for me, Niall, yes and no, only in Q-Zone. So I pretty much only play in Q-Zone at events now. There are WPBSA coaches in those Q-Zones, and a few of those have given me the odd tip. So yeah, they've sort of pointed me in the right direction. It's really funny, I'm massively inconsistent. So sometimes I'll go in there and I can play quite well. Other times I'll go in there and literally could not hit a barn door with a banjo. It's that bad.
Same.
So I've not... Yeah. Ain't that the truth? Same. So, yes, I have. I don't think I would. I don't have the time to play snooker any more seriously than I do, really. Although when I do play it, I do enjoy it. Although I do struggle with the colours because I am very badly colourblind. So... Is that something you do then, Sean? Do you think when you do finally retire, you're only 41, do you think that is something that you'd look at?
Yeah, definitely. I think I absolutely would. I mean, some people will know, a lot won't, that, you know, I am already very heavily involved in the WPBSA official coaching program, you know, and have been heavily involved in the writing and rolling out of the new level 3 advanced coaching scheme for WPBSA. So to some degree, I already am involved in it, certainly in terms of training up the current existing WPBSA coaches to the next level, the advanced level 3. I have done a little bit of coaching myself, just, you know, obviously, you know, over the years I've given people little tips and pieces of advice, but it's definitely something I would consider going into, probably more down the road of, you know, keeping a sort of eye on a player, trying to make it on the tour, being in somebody's corner. It's the part of the game I wish I'd experienced a bit more, having somebody in my corner who'd walked the path before. I've never really had that. And I always think, you know, if you could have had a Terry Griffiths, who was well known for his coaching, or a Davis, a Hendry, a Parrott, whoever else, you know, there's lots of people you could consider in your corner who've walked that path. And that's got to give you that little 5%. But yeah, no, it's something I would definitely consider. Okay. The Mariners Torquay, big supporters and big listeners to us. Great to hear from you guys again from Twitter, have said, how much longer Do we have to put up with the WST scoring page? It's amateurish, etc., etc.
Yeah, I cut that question down a little bit because it did go on, did labour it. Right, now, yes, it is. And it's something we've known about and they've known about for a long, long time. They stopped the old system, I think, at the end of last season, and the new system just simply wasn't ready to go when the new season started. However, what they are building, I've secretly seen a few snippets of it. Okay, I probably shouldn't talk about it, but what they are building looks fantastic. Now, they've got the new scoring system in the venues, which looks a lot better than the old one. It's great, very clear, very modern. But the website they're building and the systems they're building, what I've seen of them looks absolutely fantastic. Now, when that's due to go live, I'm not sure. The last I heard was by the Masters, which, of course, is only a few weeks away now.
Did they specify a year?
That, Mr. Murphy, is a very, very good point. We shouldn't have to wait too much longer. And this might sound daft, this, but if it's right when it comes out, I think it's worth the wait. I'd rather it be right than launch something that's sort of half-cocked and not quite right. So, yeah, sort of fair play to them for taking the time and getting it right. Should there have been something in place when the old system left? Yes, probably. But we don't know how let down they were and different things. So anyway, it's on its way. It should be here early in the new year. And as I say, what I've seen, the few little snippets and what I've heard, it sounds very, very good. So hopefully that will take the sport to a new level online, which should be great. So moving on, Mickey Häkkinen. Mickey, I hope I've pronounced your name correctly on Twitter. This is on the players' board. So now that Sean is part of the players' board, what changes do you want to make? I'd go with better venues, more variants, and more unique tournaments. I'm guessing that's a question for you, not me, Sean.
Yeah, and of course, that in itself is probably a question for WST. It's you know, it's very, very early days, obviously, for my tenure on the board, but you very quickly have to understand who's responsible for what. And, you know, the players' board is as it sounds. It's for the players, by the players. We are not commercial agents. We are not necessarily that commercially minded. We're snooker players, and we're looking at it from the point of view of players, trying to improve players' issues. We want to improve things like, you know, how long it takes players to get paid from Chinese events. Currently, it's between 8 to 10 weeks, which, you know, we think is ridiculous. It took everything we had in the world years ago. Again, when I was on the board, we managed to get past the, you know, if we're not paid in that time, WST underwrite the payment after 90 days. Now, we just think that's too long. So they're the types of issues that we're going to be looking at. We're currently into a massive debate over the future of the game in terms of bringing back a full tiered system across all events versus the flat 1-8 draws. And it's just not as straightforward as you might think. There's lots of issues in and around that. I tentatively, fairly joking, almost tongue-in-cheek, like to throw in that, you know, let's scrap snookers and, you know, have the spotted cue. I do think the spotted cue ball would be a great addition to the coverage, I have to admit.
100%. Absolutely it would, yeah.
These are obviously very little things. These aren't things that, you know, were on my manifesto. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see. And of course, you run into that brick wall, of course, where you realise that, you know, players' aspirations and players' dreams don't always line up with the commercialisation of a sport where, you know, WST are a profit-making business. They're not there to service the whims and the wishes of the players. They are there to make money through the promotion of snooker. So those things don't always align. And I guess our job as board members is to try and keep the players as happy as possible.
Absolutely. Just very quickly, before you move on, Mickey, on the better venues thing, that is something World Snooker Tour are constantly looking at. They are literally constantly looking at different venues, new venues, where they can put tournaments. That is a job I would not want for all the tea in China, because understanding a little bit about exactly what you need at a venue and then trying to find that, I mean, that is a horrific job. You've got the space for however many tables you need, practice tables, players' areas, broadcast requirements, everything else that you have, you know, there's a huge list of things that venues need. So to simply say better venues, I think massively understates that challenge, because that really is huge. And I think that they're trying out some new ones at the moment. We had Swansea Arena the other week. Edinburgh last year was the first time. That's a really good venue. They've got Manchester Central coming up shortly. They're back to the Telford International Centre. So they are constantly on the hunt for new venues in new locations as well. I know that. So, you know, that is a massive task. But anyway, Sean, moving on.
But you know, you're right to say that. I'll just give a little bit more colour and, you know, light and shade to that. I think you walk into a venue like the Swansea Arena, which was phenomenal, state of the art, brand new. Everything in the right place. Dressing rooms were fabulous. The players' lounge was exquisite. The venue itself was great. It was in a great location. Everything was perfect about it. And you walk in and suddenly players and everyone on social media is going, oh, this is a potential venue for the Welsh Open, or it could be the home of this or that. It's got one table in it.
Yep.
You know, that's not going to service a full field ranking event. There's a question coming later about snooker returning to the Republic of Ireland, Goffs. You know, everyone's got this nostalgic link to Goffs. I never played in it. You know, I missed it. By the time I got on tour, it had gone. But it fits one table.
Yeah.
It worked for the Irish Masters, which was an invitation event, I think, certainly towards the end of its life. Maybe it was always an invitation event. Don't know. It's got one table in it. Doesn't work for a full field ranking event for a tour that has 128 players. Now, that's something that people seem to forget. So to go a step further, if WST turned up tomorrow, and people should be careful what they wish for, if WST turned up tomorrow to do a site visit at the Crucible, they'd say no.
Yep.
Because it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit what we need. It doesn't have the hospitality areas we need. There's only 970 seats, and two tables barely fit in. So we kind of have to be very careful what we wish for, because you'd suddenly delete and erase nearly 50 years worth of history, which none of us want to do. But you know, you've got to be careful. Right now, T Snooker on Twitter, I have a lot of banter with this account on social media. The question is the best shot of 2023. This is a preloaded question, I know that, because we all know.
He's done it, hasn't he? T Snooker's done it. You've opened the floodgates now. We're going to hear all about the one in the jaws at the Welsh. Oh, God, again. T Snooker, why have you done that to us? We were all enjoying a nice podcast. It's a Christmas special. We're all having a lovely time, and you've gone and done it. You've given him an opportunity to talk about how he hit the jaws and then it came with a side off the bottom cushion and knocked the blue in the middle. Again. Go on, Sean. I've got a sore forehead off the table. Tell us all about it.
Well,
that's sure
you were. It was a cold, blustery night in Clanwood.
It's a shot of the season. We can't get away from it, can we? If anyone's not seen it, just talk us through it very quickly, Sean.
Snookered on the last red in the first frame, the semi-finals of the Welsh Open. I need two snookers, which, of course, in my world, the game would have been over anyway.
Should be over. Yeah,
shot would never have happened.
You should have walked away. You should have waved it off, Sean. That's what you should have done.
Should have waved it off. Yeah, yeah. I don't make the rules, but if I did, the game would be better. Best shot, obviously, I rattled the cue ball in the jaws of the number one pocket, the black pocket. The cue ball shoots up the table. The spin that I purposely applied to the cue ball zips the ball off the ball cushion, pots the red over the middle pocket. The best shot, not just of 2023, but of all time.
Oh, he's gone for it. He's gone for it. Goodness me. Yeah. I hate to say it, I can't disagree. I can't disagree with the shot of the season. It's the shot of the season. I cannot disagree with that. I simply can't. It was a great shot. I'll concede that one.
And you know what? I know how much that pains you to have to give me that. So I'm taking it and running. I'm running away.
Yeah, let's move on. So Lee Isaacs on Twitter, Wineman147, our mate, the wine man. On Twitter, who, by the way, I think he got made redundant recently. I think he's still looking for a job. If you're in that industry, at Wineman147 on Twitter, he's a cracking fella, is Lee. He asks, what are you drinking on Christmas Day? Expensive claret or burgundy? or Trivento and Yellowtail? Thankfully, you know us all too well. Christmas Day for me, Sean, it's about fizz. It's champagne prosecco all the way. It's a special day, isn't it? Special day, special drinks.
Special day, special drinks. What time is it too early to... What time can you have your first drink on Christmas Day?
Oh, now that's a tricky one. For me, about 11 o'clock. About 11 o'clock, but my mum, my grandmother, bless her when she was alive, and they used to get stuck into the sherry early doors. I think it was the only thing that got them through cooking Christmas dinner. But they were always like sherry at about 10 o'clock, I think. But I know some people go really early, don't they? What about you?
Yeah, I don't think there are any rules. If you've got to drive somewhere, obviously that kills everything, doesn't it? But yeah. Not getting involved in that. But if you don't have to get in your car, do whatever you feel's right. My tipple would be a nice bottle of red wine. There's one called the Chocolate Block, which is a South African wine, and it is phenomenal. That would be my little tipple. Do like a glass of port as well, I've got to be honest. I've reached that stage of my life. I like the cheese. I like the crackers. I like a glass of port.
I like the gout.
I do have gout. I've just accepted it. It's just part of life now. So I've reached that stage of my life. I enjoy all those things that you're just so bad for you. It's a one or a couple of days in Doug. Of course, I'm just looking at across my living room, and onto the side are two boxes, because why buy one when you can buy two, of Quality Street. And going back on the last podcast rant, where I was ranting about people putting wrappers in their empty tins and stuff, back, refilling the tins. In a store in Edinburgh, I found a stand where you can fill your own box of Quality Street.
Oh, genius. With your own sweets of your choice.
With what you want.
Oh, wonderful. Those boxes you're looking at, are they a long way across your living room, or are they just small but close?
Well, it's not a big living room. So they're not, I can't reach them from here, but they are obviously filled with my favourites. And if they make it to Christmas Day, they will be a wonderful addition.
So just for those, obviously, hundreds and thousands of people that listen that are thinking about sending us both Christmas presents, the Chocolate Block red wine for Sean, and I like champagne or Prosecco. So, yeah, go for it. And wherever you're having Christmas, Lee, this year, WineMan147 on Twitter, have a great one, and don't drink too much, my friend, but enjoy.
Of course, we've got platforms everywhere. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Liam McMullen has got in touch on Facebook. Says, Sean, watching you play, you seem to do harder cue waggles than most players before you strike the ball. Have you ever had a problem with feathering the cue ball? Now, for those who don't know what feathering means, feathering is the name given to the motion where you accidentally hit the cue ball before you mean to, like a golfer knocking the ball off a tee accidentally. It's funny you should ask that, Liam, because it's something that I do a lot in practice. I would get my tip quite close to the cue ball, and I do feather the ball quite a bit in practice, but I don't think I've ever done it in tournament play, ever. If I have, it can only be once or twice. And of course, having said that, it's guaranteed to happen in my next match. I've accepted that. I also have a small idiosyncrasy, which I've not actually seen many, if any, other players do. My waggles, or as we call them, feathers, actually start as I'm getting down to the shot. Most players take their stance and get down to the shot and stop in some way, very briefly, and then commence their feathers. Whereas mine actually are starting. As I'm getting down to play the shot, my backhand is already on the way out and commencing that first feather before I've even taken the step. I've tried to fix it. I've tried to change it. But it just hasn't worked. It's like asking a player, if you want to do any player's head in, just ask them if on their final backswing they breathe in or breathe out.
Oh, no.
You're guaranteed to win.
Yeah, you can think about it. The only time I've done that is using the rest. The rest or the extended rest. That's the only time I've struggled with feathering the cue ball is is using that. Obviously, it's further away, isn't it? So it's harder to see and harder to control, I guess. But that's it.
It's very hard to see the depth perception when you're using the extended cue and rest to see where the tip is in relation to the cue ball. Very, very difficult to see that. In fact, you'll notice when I'd used that implement, I actually put the tip down behind the ball on the base. As a measuring indicator to see where I am in relation to the ball and then lift the cue up. That's a very old-fashioned technique that we mentioned him earlier, but Joe Davis actually mentioned that in one of his books from like the 30s or 40s. That's a very old-fashioned technique that I still use to this day.
Fair enough. There you go. Okay, moving on then. Andrew Ive on Twitter. I like this one. Proper festive question. What Christmas presents would you give your colleagues on the tour? So, Sean, I'm going to give you the top eight players in the world, counting down from eight to one. With one exception. What are you going to buy them? So let's start with world number eight, Mark Williams. What are we buying Willow for Christmas?
A new suit.
A new suit. I'm going to gift voucher for the kebab shop. It's got to be done. World number seven, Neil Robertson.
One of the old AA maps for your car.
Oh, not a portable sat-nav, no. just an AA map. Okay, fair enough. The world number six is Sean Murphy. Well, of course, I'm going to have to buy him a bottle of the chocolate block wine that you talked about. That was easy. Number five, your old friend Mark Selby.
Oh, goodness me. A joke book, because he actually isn't that funny.
There you go. Number four is the Belgian bullet, Luca Brissell.
Goodness me. Well, he's got every car he wants, hasn't he? What do you buy the man that has everything? Of course, we did the feature back in the summer, Where's Luca? And then wish you were Luca. I think the only thing I didn't see him do was go on a cruise. So probably buy him a cruise.
Buy him a cruise. That's a great one. Number three in the world, Mark Allen. What are we buying the pistol? A trophy cabinet, because he's got plenty of them at the moment.
He's got plenty. I'll tell you what he hasn't got. He needs to get rid of that ridiculous beard he insists on growing. It's ridiculous.
So you're getting him a razor then, basically?
I'm getting him a hedge trimmer for that beard. Get rid of it, Mark. Nobody likes it.
The world number two, the ace in the pack, Judd Trump. What are we buying Judd?
Oh, dear me. What are we buying Judd?
I'm going with a tennis racket to go with that lovely shirt he wore for the Ronnie premiere. If he's going to wear polo shirt, you've got to have a racket to go with. You've got to complete the look and go full Cliff Richard, don't you?
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
I'm going with that. And the world number one, Ronnie O'Sullivan. What are we buying Ronnie for Christmas?
Well, he's had tennis elbow that much in the last few months. I'm going to buy him a strap for his elbow.
There you go, strap for that. And I'll buy him a cue action, because he always says he's looking for a cue action, doesn't he? So I'll go out and buy him one. So there you go. What would you get the players for Christmas? At 147pod, all over social media. Sean?
Francois on Twitter. Now, the name can't just be Francois. Did you edit this and take out a surname? You saved me from having to pronounce a difficult surname.
That was their actual name, I think, on there. So,
yeah. All right. Well, I mean, Francois. I mean, this is such suave and sophisticated. Francois on Twitter. Would you agree the best players ever are active right now? 100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%.
If you look at the top 10 players of all time, there's more of those players active right now than there ever have been, full stop. And I know it's contentious who are the top 10 players of all time, but I think whoever you put in your top 10, the answer is still there's more active right now than there ever has been. The level, the quality and the standard on the tour now is the highest it's ever been, full stop. It just has. Look at the number of century breaks, look at the number of maximums and everything else. It's not down to technology. Tables have changed a little bit. There's heaters, there's better cloth. But however you look at it, the standard now is the best it's ever been, which makes the achievements of players winning multiple titles now, yourself, Mark Allen, Judd Trump, Ronnie O'Sullivan, it makes those achievements for me even greater than they ever have been. So I don't even think that's a discussion now, Sean, do you?
Agreed. Move on.
Rodri Morgan on Instagram, what is Sean's opinion on star tables? Would you rather play on one of those or a Riley or a Rasson?
Very interesting question. I think they're all really, really great tables. Let's put that out there. Rasson were very new to the firm. They were, I think, an American pool table manufacturer that got involved in snooker table manufacturing quite late. And their tables are used in the Championship Leagues and the Champion of Champions. Certainly the Riley Aristocrat tables were the tables that were in use when I turned pro. And of course, I've got fond memories of those, having won two of my three Triple Crown events on a Riley Aristocrat. And then, of course, Star are the ones we use now. And they're all Of course, to the non-player, they all look exactly the same. 12-foot by 6-foot green, 6 pockets, 8 legs. They all look the same. But you would be amazed at how different they are. My actual favourite table of all time isn't on that list.
Oh, go on.
And it is the BCE Westbury.
Oh, they were used sort of in the late 80s,
they were
early
used
90s,
in the 80s,
is that right?
Yeah. To the early 90s. Yeah, the, all the way through the 80s to the early 90s was a BCE Westbury table. And in my opinion, they were the best table we've ever seen. Now, it has to be said, the pockets on a BCE Westbury were ginormous. They should have come with a health warning. Some of the footage on YouTube you watch, you know, with the players from the 80s, you know, the ball simply wouldn't have gone in the pockets today. But it built for great entertainment. You know, it looked good. And I think all snooker players of a certain vintage would have the BCE Westbury above the other three.
There you go. So hopefully that answers your question.
Leading on from that, Peter Sturgeon on Facebook says, the table seems so fast these days. Would you like to see them slowed a little bit as they seem so far detached from club tables? Well, I'll fire one back at you, Peter, because here's a question I've never been able to get to the bottom of. When and why did there become a difference between club snooker tables and tournament snooker tables?
Well, it's because they're recovered so much more often, and tournament tables are heated, whereas most club tables aren't, as far as I know.
No, but I mean, also the size of the target is different. The pockets are a completely different size. So, you know, why? Are we the only sport where, when you know, amateur to pro level, there's an actual difference in the size of the target, the distance of the court? You know, the golf hole is the same size at my local course or the Masters in Augusta.
Yeah, but let's be honest. If I went to my local course here and I went to Augusta, the actual course is very different. I mean, the greens are looked after so much better, which is the same thing, isn't it? The fairways are better as well. Same with football, same with rugby. You look at a football, but a Premier League pitch now, you can't actually turn. You have to do like ski turns. So it's like zigzags as you run as opposed to actually turning. Because the playing surfaces, they're so hard and the way they're put together. So I'll actually call you on that one, because I think there is a difference in every sport between the amateur, yeah, the
but
amateur
why,
game.
But why?
What do you mean?
Why is there a difference?
Oh, because there is, because it would cost a lot of money to re-cloth every table in a snooker club every 3 days, as you do at a professional tournament. They can't all afford to pay to have the table heaters installed and to run them, because there's costs involved in that as well. So it's down to cost. It's all down to cost.
Why do we use table heaters?
Why do we? You tell me.
Well, table heaters were brought in to combat the problems playing in the Far East, in Thailand and China, where the humidity is off the scale and the tables almost became unplayable. But why do we use them in Europe and around the UK?
Well, sure.
Complete waste of time.
Well, they're thermostat controlled, so it means that you get a consistent temperature, which hopefully will give a more consistent game, surely.
Yeah. Back to the question. The tables seem so fast these days. Would you like to see them slow down a little bit, as they do seem far detached? Not particularly. I always emphasise, for me, what I'm looking for in a table is how reactive that table is to spin. When I spin the cue ball, how long does that spin stay on it? That's the important thing for me. It's not how fast the cue ball rolls around the table. That's not what we're looking for, because we can just hit the ball harder or softer.
Yep.
It's when we play the shot with spin, how long does that spin stay on the ball for? And of course, that's into, you know, new cloths regularly and new sets of balls. Peter, you know, wherever you play, you know, when was that table in your local club last recovered? How old are that set of balls? Because we're using new sets of balls every week. So, you know, I actually think it's time clubs stepped up to the plate a little bit more, actually, and spent a bit more money making their playing facilities better. Because I don't know of another sport where the contrast between a club and a professional standard is so different, that it's such a vast difference between clubs and the Pro Tour. I think it's time clubs started stepping up and spending money on that rather than spending it on other things.
There you go. So Leah Humphrey on Facebook. Now, Leah is a friend of Chris Yallwood, who we mentioned on the last podcast, who's now resident coach at the Winchester, at Mukesh's club in Leicester. Leah asks, for Sean, how do you stay focused if you know the crowd are against you? And to give it some context, she said that she's a female player. Sometimes they go to other teams and they're a bit hostile because they don't want to get beaten by a woman. So how do you stay focused if you know the crowd are against you? Are the crowd ever against you, Sean?
Do you know, it has happened a couple of times. You know, usually after I've said something fairly volatile, which I am inclined to do every now and again. Do you know what? I actually use it as motivation. Because I think in general it's all a bit tongue-in-cheek. And I think, you know, when you get into the entertainment industry like we are, to some degree, everyone has to take their turn at being that pantomime villain every now and again. You know, you have to do it. Whenever it's gone badly for me in those situations, I've just tried to use it as motivation. I've had some horrible things said to me in arenas, things you wouldn't believe, by people sat in the crowd who were obviously, you know, voting for the other player who I'm playing against. And I just use it as a bit of motivation. I didn't need you to write my mid-match speech or my motivational talk, but you just have. And so, Leah, I would actually encourage you to use it as a, you know, very backhanded form of a compliment, these people trying to put you off in these hostile environments. They're only being bothered because they think you're dangerous. They're only, if they weren't bothered about you or threatened by you, they wouldn't show any interest. So take it as a compliment, use it as a motivator, and stick it up them.
There you go. So yeah, stick it up them, Leah. There you are.
Moving on Facebook again, Conway Snooker have got in touch. Will Sean be bringing back the moonwalk?
Well, we are going back to Llandudno, the home of the moonwalk.
Yeah, do you know, it's funny because bringing it back, I didn't really do it, did I? I got it completely up my ass.
So there you go. So you've got to do it again and do it properly.
Yeah, I do you know, I look back at that. I look back at that day in the final of the Welsh Open, and it's not the defeat to Rob Milkins that bothers me the most. It's getting the first step of the moonwalk wrong, which then led to the whole thing being a complete write-off. Can you imagine Craig Revel-Horwood marking that?
It wouldn't be a seven, would it? It would,
not have been a high score.
Here we go then. So since it was Conwy Snooker, which is that neck of the woods, if you get to the final of the Welsh Open in 2024, will you moonwalk to the table properly?
I will. And you know what? This time, I'll get it right.
There you go. It's in the books. It can't be changed now. He's agreed to do it. So there we are. Right. Sean Ammo Hamilton on Facebook. We mentioned doing more with the shootout on the previous podcast, but what, if anything, would you change? He said, I'd make it best of three. Sean, I wouldn't make it best of three. I think that changes the whole dynamic of it. And I don't think people like best of threes. I think keeping it to one frame. Now, I put an idea out on social media, which was all my work, not Sean's. I'll exclude you from that one, Sean, where I said, I would like to see a European shootout series where you have 16 players at each event. So you'd have, if my maths is right, 108 nights, which covers 128 pros. At each night, you would have two of the top 16 who would be drawn and 14 players outside of the top 16. The eight nights would be, it would basically be the evening session of the final day of the shootout. So you'd have last 16, last eight, last four, last two final. And each one would be in a different European destination, okay? So maybe places like, was it Finland, where Robbo and Selby went the other week, where maybe it couldn't hold a whole tournament, but for one night it'd be packed out. So one there, one Belgium, one in Spain, one maybe in the Netherlands, one in Germany, all over Europe, have eight nights. And then at the end of it, we have one, so almost a champion of champions shootout where the eight winners of those nights play one big night and determine the winner. It's different. It's a new format. Yes, it's still shootout, but it's a different kind of shootout. For me, it would spread the word of snooker across Europe, which I think got to be a good thing, even though it is in a bit of a bite-sized chunk. And that's what I'd do. That's my idea, is a European shootout series. Shoot me down, Sean.
No, I'm not going to. I think one of the great things about the shootout, as WST has shoehorned it into the sort of calendar now with it having ranking status, is that you can do what you want with it. They've proven that they can do what they want. And I think the shootout is the event to potentially experiment with. One of the things I remember Brandon always talking about when we were doing the tours of Germany and building the popularity of snooker in Europe was a shootout kind of thing would would really imagine that in the Tempodrome in Berlin with a couple of tables side by side or one table, whatever. You're like, they love the team element. They enjoyed that. It's got all that type of potential. I have to be honest. I do think the shootout is almost perfect as it is in its absolute, you know, madness. I think part of the reason it's so popular is because it's completely mad and bonkers and shouldn't really work. But, you know, the amount of people who tune in and watch that don't necessarily watch traditional snooker is incredible.
Yeah.
Now, I know I had the 147 and coverage of that went viral. It went everywhere. My social media went up in flames for a few days. Like, it was off the charts. I was on Five Live. I was on TalkSport. I was on the news. I was getting asked to do all sorts of things. And of course, it was a special moment with the Maxi, but it was only special because it was in the shootout.
Yeah.
And I think it's special for that reason. If it were up to me, the only thing I'd change about it, and I think it's the perfect event to try it, would be I'd stick the spotted cue ball in there. 100%. Just so we could see it.
Yeah, definitely. And like you say, I think it is the right event to try it. So that's what we do anyway. So there we are. I went on a bit of a rant about that, but there you go.
Didn't you? I love it when you go on a bit of a rant. It takes the pressure off me. David Hedrick from Facebook says, who do you think will be the next big thing other than Sean's son, Stan?
Right. I'm not going to put a name here on account of the fact that about 5 years ago, a guy came up to me at a tournament with his son, who was very young at the time. And he introduced his son to me as the next Ronnie O'Sullivan, which I thought was incredibly harsh and loaded a load of pressure on, he was a young kid at the time, on his son's shoulders. And I thought that was really, really harsh. We've stressed several times on this podcast that the likes of Stan, the likes of Liam Pullen, they need time, they need space to grow and develop. And whilst, we admire the quality they've got, I think it's really harsh to sort of put that tag on someone, really, because it loads pressure on their shoulders, doesn't it, Sean?
Yeah, it absolutely does. There's no getting away from that. I don't know. I'm worried here. Do I follow your lead and steer away from naming somebody? I don't know.
Well, I'll go. The next young player, I think, who will get a tour card is Liam Davies, the Welsh player. And he'll thoroughly deserve it when he does as well, because he's a very good player and a very good young man as well. So, yeah, Liam Davies... Yeah. For me, is the next one on the tour, but next big thing, I think, is a bit of a tag.
Yeah, I do think Stan will push on. I thought Liam Pullen played fantastically well at the shootout as well. I think they're both developing nicely, bubbling under. I'd desperately love to see them retain their tour status, you know, this time next season. That would be fabulous. Whether they will or not, you know, remains to be seen. But they're currently leading the way. And we shouldn't forget young 13-year-old Sean Liu. Who popped up at the shootout, named after me. Can you believe that? I mean, that's ridiculous. How old do I feel? And I thought he handled himself really well as well. I mean, I think I said it at the time, like, don't these kids feel pressure? Like, they just walked around the table and potted all the balls. It was incredible.
It washes over them, doesn't it? It seems to absolutely wash over them. So next one, Callum Jones, I think, on Facebook. Next dark horse to win a tournament... His shout is Mark Davis. I think if you can pick him, I think dark horse is probably the wrong term, isn't it? But there's a few players out there. Zhou Yulong needs to win a tournament at some point. Nopon needs to win one. We can't call Lizowski a dark horse, can we?
No. No, you can't. No.
Every season.
Will Lizowski he win one?
Who knows? Like as we said before, the quality in the field now is the best it's ever been. So will he win one? Don't know. It's hard to win a ranking event. They don't give them out like sweets, do they? So I don't know.
I think the next first time ranking event winner will be Tom Ford.
Oh, okay.
I think he'll be the next person to win who hasn't won before.
He seems to have found something different, doesn't he, at the moment?
Yeah, I just think the form he showed and he's continued to show it to some degree in terms of he did well in Scotland. Obviously would have liked to have done better, as would we all. But, you know, he's still maintaining that form. He'll next be out, I think, in the World Grand Prix. I'm sure that's his next outing. I think he'll be the next player to rock up and win who hasn't won before.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd agree with you on that one.
Right. Grant Lorimer on Facebook. For Phil, out of all the sports you've worked on, which person has slipped through the net due to injury or stopping doing the sport? Also, if you could only MC one sport, what would it be?
Ooh, that last one's a tough one. I walked away from stadium announcing rugby league this last season. I did 15 years with Wakefield. Rugby league's always been a love of mine. I walked away from that, so I don't do that anymore. I still do a bit of darts, a bit of fishing, obviously snooker and boxing as well. I can't choose between that. I love the snooker, I love the boxing. They're incredibly different, and I couldn't choose between the two of them. So I'm not going to answer that one. As for a person who slipped through the net due to injury, there was a player.
Does that mean somebody who should have made it who didn't?
Yeah. Now, there was a player I coached as a junior at York called Chris Brining in rugby, who Chris went on to turn pro. He went over to Salford in Super League, did incredibly well, and he was just sort of coming into his own, played hooker, bossed him around the pitch, and then he got a series of injuries, just as I think some of the bigger Super League clubs were looking at him. And he got a series of injuries. He ended up playing back at York, and then he retired a couple of years ago now, which makes me feel really old that I coached him as a junior and he's now retired. But he's someone I think, were it not for injuries, who could have performed at a much higher level. I mean, he was a Super League player. You don't get much higher than that. But I think he would have kicked on were it not for injuries and done very, very well. So, yeah, Chris Brining, just for anyone that's listening that knows rugby league, you'll probably know that name, or hopefully you will anyway. So, next up, Kieran Morgan on Facebook. We've already mentioned it. I'll repeat what I asked last time, he says. Sorry, Kieran. Surely it's time to bring an event back to Goths. Now, I've never been to Goths. I've heard a lot about it. The one thing I've always been told is it's simply not big enough for... You can get one table in there, and it's a great venue, amazing venue, but for broadcasters apparently look at Goths and straight away say it's just not big enough. It doesn't have the facilities and the size that we need. And I think you alluded to that before, Sean.
Yeah, it's also full of horse crap out the back. You know what I mean? It's where they sell horses. It's a horse market. So
as I'm sure you would, I'd love to see an event in Southern Ireland.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, living here, I can tell you that there are very few places in the world where snooker's more popular than the Republic of Ireland. Yeah. I mean, they've got the tournament in Northern Ireland, which is fabulous, but in the Republic, it's massive. Everywhere I go, people stop you and they know the results. They're passionate about it here. It's big time. I do lots of shows here. They're always packed out. And the desire for a professional event back in the Republic is strong. I can't see it being at Goths, to be honest. Yeah. And people seem to have this nostalgic connection to Goths. I've only ever driven past it. I've seen pictures of it. As I say, it's a horse market. It's where they sell horses. So it's not ideal. You can only fit one table in the floor. I don't even think back in the day they had a practice table there. I don't think it's even big enough for practice facilities. I think the practice table was in a hotel down the road. So I think our desire to go back to Goths probably needs to move on, Kieran. But I think, you know, there's definite passion on this island to bring pro snooker back to the Republic, 100%.
Absolutely. And I know there's a lot of people who would like to see it back there. So, yeah, definitely.
Right, Rosalind Bull, we're racking through these questions, aren't we? Here, Rosalind Bull on Facebook. At the UK's, a player put their chalk on the side of the table and Hendry was incandescent with rage. Why?
Incandescent? Well, is that kind
too.
Of recorder?
Me too.
Yeah, go on then, Sean. Why? Why does it make you fume so much when a player puts his chalk on the side of the table? Is it because they're not putting it in the chalk pouch? Is that what it is?
Oh, goodness me. Goodness me, don't. Get the therapist on the phone. I think this is a very British thing, if I'm honest. I think growing up in snooker clubs in the UK, if you put your chalk on the side of the table, you'd either get told to remove it immediately or beaten up.
Well, you were in very different snooker clubs to one I used to play in, that's for sure.
Honestly, if you were playing snooker, and you know, if you're a beginner, then that's different because you know somebody had put you in the right lane soon enough. If you did that in a snooker club with proper snooker people, they would, you know, a good friend of mine, John, Someone did it in our club once, I remember. He picked the chalk up and he threw it the length of the room. It was seen as such a disrespectful thing to the opponent. I don't know why. I've got no idea why. I don't know where that came from. And now you see it starting to bleed its way through into the game. There's something in it. It does something to me. It makes me want to, throw something at the screen when I see people doing it. There's obviously nothing wrong with it. There's obviously, it's not offending anybody. But I think for players who've grown up through the UK system, there's just some deep-rooted etiquette that it offends. Is an automatic disqualification too harsh? Probably. Wow. Probably. That's probably too harsh. But, just unless you're Chris Wakelin, everyone's got a pocket, haven't they? So just put it in your pocket.
Apart from Chris Wakelin.
What's wrong with you?
And Chris Wakelin has got a...
Well, you
can't even say it, can you? He's got a chalk pouch. Of course he has.
This doesn't even match the colour of his outfits. Chris, get one that just you can't see. Why have you got an orange one?
Time is marching on. I'm going to pick a couple of questions to round it off before we have our pointless question, of course. So just on chalks then, Tom Millard on Facebook, how many chalks does Sean get through in a season?
Well, since we all switched, or most of us switched to this new brand, the Towan brand, and it's so less abrasive. It's the chalk lasts for months and months and months. I think I've had one block this season. I would go through more if I gave it away. I think that's the only reason I dip into my stash is because I've given it away to a fan in the crowd at some stage. That's the only reason you go through it. It just doesn't seem to wear out. The old chalk, you'd be going through getting a new block every couple of weeks. But this stuff doesn't seem to go anywhere. It's absolutely fabulous.
That's fair enough. Nathan Woodward on Facebook, what are both of your favourite achievements?
Ooh. Favourite achievements? I mean, you don't want a soppy answer like children. No.
Well, I turned 48 on Sunday. The day of the Scottish Open final. And I think just reaching that is probably my favourite achievement. I think there's other things I've done in my life. I've done very, very well to still be around.
It's an achievement for you just to be here.
I'd agree with that completely. For me, it's just to be doing the things that I'm doing, really. I'm very fortunate to get to do what I do, and I thoroughly enjoy myself. I mean,
what a wet answer. Well, Do you know what, Nathan, right? Nathan Woodward took the time to get involved and ask a question, and you've given him a wet answer like, I'm just happy to be doing what I'm doing. I love my job.
We're not all sat there with the Tour Championship and Players' Championship trophies and your Championship League paperweight sat behind you. We don't all have that. We don't all have the... When did you win the World Champs? 1985, I think it was. 84, 85? We don't all have that, Sean, do we?
I'll check my replica trophy later and see.
We don't all have that. Yours has got to be the world's, hasn't it?
I suppose so, yeah. No, I suppose so, in all seriousness. And it's, you've obviously had your career backwards in some degree. It was the first big win of my life. So I've spent the rest of my life trying to regain that height and that thrill. But, I'll keep trying. But, yeah, I suppose, how do you top the World Championships?
Yeah, I don't think you do. So let's have the final listener question we're going to have in this festive special from Dan Lynn on Instagram. You've talked about the boxes getting smaller, but what are the best chocolates from the usual festive boxes? Go on then, Sean, because this is a big point. This is a big point. So Quality Street first off. Is it the green triangle or the purple one? Which one?
I'm going for the gold baton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
That's one of the worst.
Oh no, I love those. But I do like the ones you've mentioned as well. I'll give you those. No problem. I think everyone overlooks this, and I'm hoping that this slips into this category because Dan's been quite niche with the festive boxes. But for me, after eights still feature, and they're still a festive. I'm saying after eight are the absolute daddy.
Yeah.
Of the festive tree.
I would agree with that, actually. Having lived opposite the Nestle Roundtree factory in York, and the day each week when they made after eights, and you opened your front door and literally breathed in dark chocolate and mint. Oh, that was the best day of the week. Like, literally, there's a reason I'm fat. I don't eat. It's just breathing in York. It's all the chocolate you breathe in as you're walking around. But that smell as you left your house in the morning was absolutely incredible. But go on then. So the other festive. So that's, we've done Quality Street. What else is there? There's Heroes.
Heroes. Wouldn't know what was in a box of Heroes, actually.
Is those cream egg twisted things in Heroes? I quite like those. I think they're in Heroes.
Yeah, but you can't have them if it's not. You've got to have them at Easter. You can't have them at... What are you doing? You can't have an Easter egg cream egg themed chocolate at Christmas, you maniac.
Yeah,
there are lists for people like you.
That's a bit harsh.
What are you talking about?
So there you go. See, we've had all of those. So after eights, I think we're all agreeing. After eights are the Christmas chocolate, yeah.
In a shock turn of events, are we agreeing on this?
Yeah, 100%, yeah. And you take the little envelope out of the box and put it in the bin, because I once went to a box of after eights. All the envelopes were there. There was no chocolate. And do you know, if you thought Hendry was incandescent with rage at chalk on the side of the table. Oh, goodness me, there was no control in me. I was furious. Terrible show.
Okay, well, listen, I'm shocked that we've agreed. Thankfully, we have the pointless question Christmas special to separate us.
It's a big one.
I'm quite keen to see where we go on this.
This is a big one, Sean, isn't it? I think we can all agree this is the big Christmas question.
This may divide the world.
It may. Go on, then. As it's the festive Christmas special... You may ask the pointless question for a change.
Thank you. It's very simple. Brussels sprouts, yes or no?
It's an absolute hard yes from me. Love them.
And maybe this sets the tone for next year. It's a yes from me too.
Oh, wow, I'm stunned. Absolutely stunned.
Goodness, I love a Brussels sprout.
So do I. Brussels sprouts. And do you know what? For me, either just boiled or steamed, normal, or fried up with salt, pepper, and bacon lardons. Lardon, by the way, which is a funny word and shouldn't be, but it is, with bacon lardons. Absolutely beautiful.
Do you know, because this is a podcast and no one else can see you, I can see how excited that description's just made you. I'm slightly concerned. I know what you're having for dinner.
Just remember, though, ladies and gents, sprouts are not just for Christmas. You can eat them anytime. Yes, we're both agreeing on sprouts. So come on then, tell us the big Christmas question. Sprouts, yes or no, at 147pod across all forms of social media. Just to reiterate what we said at the start, we've had a great year. Thank you ever so much for listening, for getting involved, for making us the top snooker podcast in the world of this year, which has been incredible. We are shortlisted for the Sports Podcast Awards, Sports Talk Award. We're going to put that out on social media very, very shortly. Please do vote for us on there. But yeah, just a huge thank you, really. We hope you all have a great Christmas. I certainly intend to. I love this time of year. It's brilliant. And yeah, it's been a great year, Sean, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been fabulous, and it's been great doing the podcast. It's so rewarding that so many people enjoy it and download it every couple of weeks. We love making it. We're so thrilled that you enjoy listening to it. It's the interaction I like, the questions we get every time. Obviously, the banter on socials is fantastic. We didn't want it to be a case of me and you just talking and it being quite clinical. We always want it to be like listening to two mates down the pub. And it's one of those chats that you can get involved in. So a big thank you again from us both. And yeah, all that remains to be said from me is to wish each and every one of you a very, very Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year. So Sean, have a great one.
You too, mate.
Take care. We'll see you in the new year. Don't forget, interact with us at 147pod. Have a great one. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.